Welcome back to season two of the Ivy League Prep Academy podcast, equipping you to successfully pursue the college of your dreams. We believe everyone deserves to reach their full potential, and the admissions process shouldn't hold you back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Ivy League Prep Academy podcast. This is a unique podcast episode because I'm actually replaying a presentation that I gave for an organization called Grad Achiever. And I just wanted to take 10 seconds at the beginning of this podcast before we play the audio file of my presentation to share what that is. Grad Achiever is a platform that's available online for free. It was created by a parent who cared about helping not only her own child, but also a community of parents to find the resources that they need to empower themselves, to be able to make good decisions and prepare well for competitive college admissions. And so I don't have any kind of partnership or relationship. I'm not paid to endorse this in any way at all. But I just feel like the Grad Achiever website, which is at www.gradachiever.com, is a great resource. It's free and it's available. And I thought my listeners might appreciate that. And so when you do create an account that's free, you can find a whole bunch of resources of all shapes and sizes. It's really a great resource. It's free and it's growing. And I wanted to just throw my endorsement behind it. I think they're doing some great work. And so without any further ado, let me just transition to the presentation that I gave to their audience.
Get out of this whole journey is to not only make them successful in their college journey, but also helps them to become good citizens in their community. With that said, Steve, on to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kavita. And I just want to also extend my endorsement of the platform as well and my encouragement for everyone. I have only spent hours on the platform, not you know, dedicated years of my life like some of you parents have, some of the mothers who are running this. But it's been fantastic just seeing all of the resources. So what a gift that you are giving to the community. And I really, really honor that. As someone who has worked with a lot of families, there are so many instances where having the information in one place and having access to ask questions and get answers in one place, I know that for so many families, that is just so, so valuable. So thank you for doing that. Let me dive in. This is, I actually speak regularly about Ivy League schools and Ivy League admissions. My podcast is the Ivy League Prep Academy podcast, and my course is the Ivy League Challenge. So we do a lot in my universe around Ivy League admissions, and I specialize in early college prep. So I work with a lot of students who are in eighth grade and ninth grade and help them build up their resumes. But understanding the audience today, I included a lot of information that I hope will be helpful for first-gen families. In other words, families where the parents went to school in another country, and now they're trying to figure out this really wacky U.S. university admissions process. And the mistakes that I see over and over and over again, I am literally writing a book about these issues for first-gen families, and I just wanted to include some of those details there as well. In the lower right-hand corner, you can see a link to my podcast. The podcast is the Ivy League Prep Academy podcast, and you can find it at that URL or anywhere that you get podcasts at Spotify or Apple or whatever. And a lot of, I can go as far as I can go in an hour today, but there are hundreds of episodes there, and that can be very helpful as well. All right, so I want to begin by sharing a true story. This is not Jacqueline, but we're going to say that this stock photo represents someone who is a very, very real person, someone that might sound familiar to many of you. Jacqueline was an absolute overachiever. She worked so hard throughout middle school and then high school. And the reason for that is she had dreams of going to a very selective college. So she was a top student. She actually worked hard to become an athlete. She was in student government. She did even more than that. She did everything that she could to make it to her dream campus, which was not an Ivy League school, but The Ivy League, as hopefully some of you know, maybe most of you know, is a sports league, right? It's the eight colleges that play each other in sports every year. And I feel deeply sorry that just the last game, Yale and Harvard, Yale actually beat my team and won the Ivy League championship. So the Ivy League is not a group of the best of the best schools per se. It is a sports league that happens to be the first league in the United States. It was the oldest college is Harvard, and many of those colleges are very old and outstanding. But there are other outstanding colleges as well that are not in that sports league, and Stanford is one of them. And this particular student, Jacqueline, really wanted to go to Stanford, and she gave her all throughout high school. She sacrificed sleep, she sacrificed fun and friends, and did everything she could do to be competitive. And of course, it was, as some of you with older siblings might be familiar, it's heartbreaking. It's a bit devastating when she was rejected, not just from Stanford. She was rejected from every school that she applied to, even though she had outstanding test scores and grades, more than a 4.0. She had a higher than 1500 SAT score and was rejected from everyone, from everywhere. She eventually did that. I mean, schools or students with that kind of profile can get in very easily to a lot of schools. And she did get into a school that she ended up being happy with. But it was frustrating because even one of her classmates in her high school, who had lower test scores, lower grades, was less involved in high school than she was, got in to one of the schools that she applied to that where she was rejected. And it just felt unfair. It felt ridiculous, unreasonable. And that problem is not unique to Jacqueline. Okay, these statistics are nothing new, not a surprise to anyone here. The admission rates for schools like UPenn have gone down so much in just the last 30 years, it's hard to even recognize what is happening. So some of you may be feeling like, man, you are unfamiliar with the landscape in the United States. A lot of parents who went to school 30 years ago are also completely unaware of the landscape today. So even US families are really struggling with this. But of course, families who didn't go to school in the United States have that extra level of frustration. It took about 30 seconds to find these links, and we can find the same one in about 3 months. It will take about 30 seconds once we get the new news about the next round, because it does look like, based on the number of applications so far going into top-tier schools, it looks like this will be another record-breaking year. Okay. And so here's what most families are told when they ask, how do I stand out? How do I become competitive for a top-tier college? Right? I want to go to a good college. I want to go to a great college. What do I do? And I don't know where you all are in the United States, but I can tell you, if you're asking this question, then you're probably going to get these same answers. Number one, take the most rigorous classes available in your school and get great grades. Number two, demonstrate leadership in as many ways as possible. Right? Number three, sometimes number three is not included, but oftentimes you'll hear people volunteer, spend to do 300 or 200 to 500 hours volunteering, is a common number that you'll hear. Develop some kind of spike or wow factor. And then, of course, the test scores are critical as well. And so we don't stop and think, though, that if you're getting this advice and someone else in the school down the street is getting the same advice, and everyone else around the country is getting the same advice, anyone who's asking this question is hearing the same advice, is that a reason to stop and wonder if this advice will actually lead to standing out or not? If lots of people are doing this, does that actually help my child or help me to stand out? And we don't ask that question. Instead, we feel a bit overwhelmed by how much there is to do. And we say, okay, well, here's the thing, right? I'm only a teenager for a few short years. I'll have the rest of my life to benefit from these couple of years of sacrifice. And so I will sacrifice, you know, my sleep, my comfort, my friends, my fun, and the rest of my life, I'll be able to benefit from this. And so there's no stopping to ask, is this the right strategy? We trust those that say, do these four things, these ones right here, or five if they add volunteering. And we say, okay, if that's what I got to do, clearly I'm not going to have time to sleep. I'm not going to have time for enjoyment, but let me just be ambitious for a few years. And once I'm into my dream school, the rest of my life, I will benefit. And they just feel like, you know what? That's a price that I'm willing to pay. If I can get into that dream college, I'm willing to pay that price. And I want to just really, I want to stop and before I get too far and people start to think, am I one of those people who says, don't even care about the ranking of your school, don't care about which school you go to, they're all the same. No, that's not me at all. In fact, the very first lesson that I have with my students, I share some of the most amazing experiences I had at Harvard. I believe that I am a better human being as a result of going to an excellent college. I am a better person. I'm a better member of the community. And my experience at Harvard was better than I dreamed it would be. Okay, so I have no qualms with being ambitious. In fact, I think that ambition is amazing, that we should encourage that among our teenagers. And no one should be discounted or hushed when they ask questions that show that they want to be ambitious, right? The reward is worth working very, very hard for. It's a tremendous experience being able to go to one of these schools. If I had more time, I would share a couple of the stories that I share with my students that just kind of illustrate how powerful this process can be. But this strategy that everyone gives you, that everyone says, this is how you make it into Harvard, or this is how you make it into a top-tier college, right? Take the most rigorous classes and get great grades, get top ACT or SAT scores, volunteer, develop an X factor, and demonstrate leadership in as many ways as possible. This strategy is not defined and not explained with the appropriate level of context to be helpful for people. And because it is not explained with the appropriate level of context, it ends up breaking teenagers. The strategy is broken. Teenagers get worn out. They get burned out. They get ground down. I've seen this over and over where teens really lose themselves. And instead of this healthy ambition, it turns into toxic desperation, where ambition, which is wonderful, becomes desperation. And desperation is not wonderful. It does not lead to positive results. And so this strategy without the context is broken. It is absolutely broken. First of all, it takes you into what I call the impressiveness trap. What is the impressiveness trap? Starting in about seventh grade, eighth grade, the most ambitious teens and their high-performing, high-achieving families start asking the same question: what's more impressive to an admissions officer? Right? And we don't really stop and think about this, but there are 30,000 high schools in North America. And all 30,000 of these high schools have students in them that are asking, what's more impressive to an admissions officer? And all of these tens of thousands of students who are ambitious, who are asking the question, what's most impressive to an admissions officer, all have kind of the same idea of what's more impressive. And so we all kind of feel like, you know what? Valedictorian is more impressive than top 5%. Top 5% is more impressive than top quarter. Top quarter is more impressive than top half. Okay, that's obvious, right? But joining the team is less impressive than being the captain of the team, right? Being a member of the orchestra is less impressive than being first chair violin. And so we all have the same impressions, the same ideas of what's more impressive to an admissions officer. And when you use the impressiveness mindset, that question to navigate high school, you will decide that, man, I need to sacrifice my sleep, my fun, my friends, everything that's important to me so that I can go do the more impressive thing. Yeah, that's important because there's no way to do this. You don't have enough time without sacrificing things that you care a lot about. But then after 4 years of following that strategy, what's going to happen? Finally, you turn in your application and it is objectively impressive. It is absolutely impressive. You spent 4 years sacrificing everything so that you could be impressive. And it's objectively impressive. And you know what? After hundreds of hours of conversations with admissions officers, most of my admissions officers' friends are at Harvard, but I've spoken with plenty at other schools as well. You turn in an application, if you spend 5 years from 8th grade to 12th grade trying to be the most impressive person possible, you turn in an application that looks exactly like tens of thousands of other applications. And so you worked so hard to be boring. There's not a different way to say this. Your application is boring. Okay. And when there are 30,000 high schools, that means there are 30,000 valedictorians. There are 30,000 team captains of all the teams that you're fighting so hard to become a team captain of. There are 30,000 first chair violinists. All right. So being impressive through high school, focusing on impressiveness is a trap that does not give you the rewards that you're looking for. And as you're trying so hard to become impressive, sacrificing your fun and your sleep and your friends is actually not a small deal. The play that teenagers are inclined to take part in actually builds so much of the metacognition, the empathy building, the problem solving, relationship building, understanding how to lead, to communicate. A lot of that happens during play, which is, you know, a relatively small thing. Maybe we can relearn how to play after high school, but yeah, maybe it's not so small. Sacrificing sleep is a much bigger deal. The irony of trying to sacrifice sleep so you can fit in everything that you need to do when you're a student is, I mean, absolutely shocking. Also, in the very first lesson that I teach my students, we talk about sleep. Why? Because of the research out of the Sleep Science Center at Stanford and UCLA, that joint Sleep Science Center, fantastic research that shows us, look, sleep deprivation has the same effect on your cognition, on your ability to learn, on your ability to remember things, on your ability to transfer short-term learning to long-term memory. That whole process requires a refreshed brain, and sleep deprivation has the same effect as intoxication. So we have our most impressive, our most ambitious teenagers who would never dream of showing up to school drunk, who are so sleep deprived that cognitively they're functioning as if they are drunk in school. And then because you can't learn as quickly, your brain is not as clear, you're not as focused, you're not as capable of remembering the things that you're learning in the first place. Now you have to spend more time reviewing it 3 or 4 times to get it in, where otherwise you might have been able to do it once if you had enough sleep. Anyway, some of the things that we sacrifice in order to be more ambitious are actually just silly. And sleep is definitely one of those. All right, so we sacrifice fun and sleep and friends and everything because this reward is so high. If we can just get into the great school. And then there's the killer. We don't realize the other thing that we're sacrificing. When you say, let's just be as impressive as possible. In fact, let's go find the resumes of someone who did get into the school that I want to get into, right? Let's go see what they did and let's just be that person. The underlying message that we don't think that we're sharing with our teens, that we don't realize we're communicating, we're telling them, look, go pretend to be this person. This person was good enough to get in. Here's what they did. You do what they did. You pretend to be them. And maybe you'll be considered good enough too. And obviously that is a dangerous message, right? That's not the message that we want to be sharing with our teens. And so what is important to our teen actually should be important in their college prep journey. Our teens' values actually are the one thing, their single greatest differentiator, which we'll get to in just a second. Okay. And I think this is important because I'm going to challenge for just a second after I told you I really love being ambitious and using ambition, using college admissions to encourage ambition. But I have seen plenty of my own classmates be very frustrated at this stage of their lives. Very frustrated, very unhappy. And I know plenty of people who really wanted to go to the Ivy League, but were rejected, and who go on and become really successful and really happy, really fulfilled. And I would say that the difference in your life, you know, what we really care about is a much longer term horizon, right? What we really care about for our teens is that they lead a happy and meaningful and successful life, not that they go to any particular college. And we care about the college because we believe that that college can help them to lead that more meaningful life, that more meaningful, successful, and happy life. And what we sometimes discover as we do this is that, you know, our resourcefulness, our self-efficacy, our ability to build relationships, our mindset, our ability to see problems as a challenge and not a stress, those are the things, regardless of the school you go to, that are more likely to lead to a happy, meaningful, successful life. And so it's fortunate that those are the things that also make you more competitive for a selective college. So we don't have to choose one or the other. But if we neglect resourcefulness, self-efficacy, friendship building, you know, metacognition in general, if we neglect that element of our own personal development and our own personal growth, in order to become more competitive for an Ivy League school, ironically, we become less competitive, and we also cut out our teens, you know, legs from under them. We make it harder for them to lead a successful life. Okay, and here's the biggest kicker of all. Schools don't want 2,000 clones of the same person. So if everyone's getting the same advice, and everyone that's working really, really hard is doing all those things that I just talked about at the beginning, right? In order to be competitive, then we have tens of thousands of applications that look very, very similar to each other. And admissions officers have told us over and over and over again, they're not looking for 2,000 clones of the same person. They want to find a way to bring together a class of students that is rich and diverse, has all kinds of differences in all kinds of different ways. And that ecosystem of different types of people functioning together to solve problems is what they feel like is the secret sauce. They don't want 2,000 clones. They don't want 2,000 of the same kind of person. Okay? So what ends up happening is you end up being one of the valedictorians that Harvard gets every single year, where Harvard could take just valedictorians and fill not one, but two freshman classes every year with leftovers. And yet only a tiny fraction of those valedictorians are admitted to Harvard. A lot of their classmates who scored lower than them are admitted over the valedictorians themselves. And Drew Faust was one of the outspoken people who talked about this, the dean at Harvard up until just a few years ago. And she's not the only one. Okay, there are plenty of people. Stu Merrill at MIT talks about this pretty frequently. Stanford is pretty outspoken about the fact that they care a lot about the holistic process. Dartmouth is another one that very, very vocal about this. Yale as well. Anyway, a lot of schools talk about this, but when we get stuck in our Facebook groups with other parents who are stressed out about whether or not we are impressive enough, then we can lose the healthy process. And so I know that we are at about the halfway mark. I want to turn the presentation over to Kavita to share something about the platform. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about, okay, so that's the mistake that so many families are making. That's probably the mistake that we've been making. So what do we do instead? What can we do instead of that? And so Kavita, let me turn the time over to you for just a few minutes, and then you can let me know when it's my turn to come back. I'll stop sharing here.
Thank you, Steve. We'll get into the crux of what to do next. Ritu, over to you to give a quick tour of the platform, please.
So thanks, first of all, Steve, for sharing such insightful information with our audience today. Thank you so much. Hey, everyone, this is Ritu here. I'm one of the members of Grad Achiever Core team. And as Kavita has stated earlier, that we have built this free platform for high school students, parents, tutors, mentors, and counselors who are looking for or sharing college admission related information. This platform is equipped with many useful college admission related resources and informations, and we are trying to provide all of it at one place. So let us give a quick walkthrough to our website. Let's start with the events, right? This, you can find many college related events here. Even you can post events and share with others if you are aware of any. So it just go through several approval process within our team. We just validate the credibility of the events and then we share it with all the audience. Then we have groups. You can join these groups specific to your area of interest, or even you can create your own groups related to your college or related to your school, or invite others to have very focused discussions within those groups. We have members option where you can connect to other Grad Achiever community members, introduce yourself and start any focused discussions with the specific community member. Also, please follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and also join our WhatsApp Grad Achiever community to receive on-time information related to our events and podcast. And also, we would love to hear your feedback related to this platform on how we can improve on it and add more meaningful resources to it. Thank you so much.
A lot of what you've just given are some of the tools that can empower people to do what I'm going to teach them to do now. So those of you who are listening in, what do we do now that we realize, my goodness, there are 30,000 high schools in North America. Even if my child is valedictorian, he'll be one of tens of thousands, or she, right? And so how do we then take this information that we know that the context is incomplete. How do we fill in that gap? How do we understand the admissions officer's perspective so that we can actually gain that advantage that we're looking for and stand out in these applications? Okay. And so the first thing that I love that was just shared is we've got all this information about how do we find your future careers and how do we gain that extra level of self-awareness? Because some of the activities that are filling your teen's time are also wasting their time. And if we do have teenagers here, I want to speak directly to you. You know which activities I'm talking about. There are activities that you do simply because you were told that it looks good on an application. And there are too many to name here, right? There are just too many of these activities that are very time consuming. They don't fill your soul. They don't nourish your soul, right? They don't recharge your batteries. In fact, they might drain your batteries a little bit, and then you're even more drained when you need to do your schoolwork. And so you're doing these activities, but you've been told, you know, you need to do it all 4 years. It looks good on a resume. And so we have all these activities that waste your time and your energy. And we need to clarify which activities actually do not waste your time and energy. And to do that, we actually begin with the teen's core values. Okay, what are your core values? What matters to you? And a slide that I took out because it is time consuming that now I regret taking out, but I'll summarize is a few of the questions that we ask to help teenagers figure out what actually matters to them, right? And these are the things that, you know, if a teenager knows that they're interested in one subject, that's great. That's a clue to help get to what actually matters most to them on this planet, like what their core values actually are. Other things that we want to ask, you know, what are the things that break your heart? Because things that break your heart are probably violating your core values, or if they make you angry, right? What kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? When you leave a community, when you graduate from high school, what do you hope people remember you for? But high school, that's probably not what we really want, because people might think, well, I want them to remember me for being a great student. What about halfway through your life? And what about at the end of your life? When you pass away, what do you hope people talk about? What legacy do you hope to have left behind that people say, you know what, she really impacted me or my community in this way? What is that way? What do you hope people say about you? Who are the people that you admire? And why? What is it about that person that you admire when there's other people who might be similar that you don't admire so much? So what are the things that really stand out to you? And of course, there are a number of questions, a number of exercises that we do to help a team figure out their core values, but that's where it begins. Your core values are what make you that different, that they're the thing that differentiates you in this ecosystem that the admissions officers are trying to put together. When admissions officers try to shape a class, they're looking at those differences in the humans and trying to pull differences together. And the hardest thing for them is when they have 30 or 40,000 applications of teens who have no idea who their what their core values are, because they spent all 4 years of high school trying to be impressive. And so they have very, very busy schedules. They're very overscheduled, and they have no time to figure out what their core values are. And therefore they have no time to go and live their core values, right? That's where the best college resumes begin, is with your core values. So we do an activity audit. We identify those core values. And then we also need to understand a few key mindsets that do make a big difference, right? That can set you up for success. Once you've figured out what your core values are, then we can begin moving in a direction, right? Because we want to find a problem that violates your core values that you can begin to solve. And there's a couple of ways to do this. For some teenagers, they know right away, yeah, this thing that makes me angry. When I graduate, when I'm older, when I'm qualified, I'm going to come back and solve this problem. And of course, that's the extension of the impressiveness trap. My job right now is to be impressive so that later I can be qualified to come back and solve this problem. And we don't even see what is so obvious, right? That everyone who's saying you better work really, really hard right now because college is coming, these are the same people who, when you were in middle school, they said you better work really, really hard because high school is coming. And in elementary school, it's you better work really, really hard because middle school is coming, right? And when you get to college, they're going to say, work really, really hard because your first job is coming, or medical school is coming, or graduate school is coming. Your first job is coming. Your first career is coming. And you get into your first career, and it's you better work really, really hard because then you can move into leadership. Then you can move into whatever position. And people live their whole lives working really, really hard because the next thing, which feels more important than the thing that's happening now, is about to happen. And so we work really, really hard to prepare now so that we're ready for the next thing. And what we neglect along the way is the fact that as soon as we figure out what our core values are, we can start living our core values. And that preparation for to become better qualified for something in the future actually happens at a faster rate when we do that. And so I'll tell you, when you spend time on Harvard's campus, when I take an unofficial, unscientific survey of the students, my friends on that campus, how many of them were not working really, really hard in high school to prepare for college? How many of them were just so focused on their thing? They were so almost quirky about their thing, their mission, their quest. They had a thing that they cared deeply about. They didn't have time to worry about being impressive for college. They were worried about their thing. And what we find is that this myth, this trance that society is just stuck in, work really, really hard because the next thing is when life really matters, right? The next thing that's coming, that's what you need to be prepared for. That's when life starts to matter. It's like the Einstein quote, right? That fish don't realize they're swimming in water, right? We don't realize we're in this trance. Prepare now because the important stuff is about to come. Actually, once you figure out your core values, you can identify problems that violate those core values. And as a 14-year-old, as a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, you can begin working to solve those problems. You can begin working to solve the issues that violate your core values. And as you work to solve those problems, guess what happens? You develop the mindset, the skill set. You develop the experience to recognize new problems, to recognize how to pull together a team, and to solve those problems. So when you are older and you think you're going to be qualified, if you haven't been solving problems this whole time, if you've just been preparing for the next thing this whole time, then when you're better qualified, you're still not going to solve these problems. You don't have any experience solving problems, right? And so you're going to keep preparing for the next big thing. Ironically, if you stop preparing and you start living in a way that's rich and meaningful today, you start solving these problems that matter to you now, you actually become better qualified to solve those problems in the future as well. All right, so there's two ways to do this. Number one, you begin identifying a problem that violates your core values and you work to solve that problem. As you work to solve that problem, you overcome, you know, at first you're naive about what the solutions might be. You work past that and you begin to discover, wow, there's some important questions that we need to answer in order to solve this problem. And so working to solve the problem naturally leads into academic research. And you begin exploring, what are the professors, what are the questions that professors are answering in the domain of this problem that I'm solving in my community, right? How do I connect with these professors? How do I support them? Or how do I recruit them to my team? And we've seen plenty of just my own students who have joined research teams, of course, with professors, but plenty of students who have recruited professors to join their teams to solve problems in the real world. And that's exciting because then you are moving from tactical problem solving into academic research. And now you're presenting yourself, by the time you apply to college, you're saying, look, I know who I am. I know my core values. I know what I represent. And here's why my community is better because I live my core values. Here's all the things that I will bring to campus. That problem solving and that mindset and that resourcefulness, that leadership, the empathy, all of the things that I have to do to solve a real problem in the real world, I'm bringing that to campus with me, along with my core values. And so you know exactly where I fit into this ecosystem. I'm not one of 40,000 applications that did everything they could for 4 years trying to be impressive. So they end up looking exactly the same as the other 40,000. I'm out of that pile. I'm in the pile of people with my core values. And that's only 8 people deep, right? And I've got a deeper, richer experience over these 4 years of high school because I've been doing real things in the real world. And then that led to academic research. Now, the opposite is also true. Some students don't know what problem they want to solve, but they love one subject. And so you'll dive into that subject and begin doing academic research. And that academic research should lead to problems that can be better served by sharing that research and sharing your expertise in a real way. Okay. So both of those options work really, really well. You solve the problem that leads to research, or you start the research that leads to the problems. But either way, you are becoming a bit of an expert in your niche, in the thing that you care deeply about. Okay. And I just spent a lot of time explaining these three key ideas, but that's what I just explained. Your research, your problem solving is going to be aligned with your core values, and it works to solve that problem with the help of experts, with organizations, professionals, communities. And oftentimes these experts, these professionals, these communities have dedicated years or decades to solving the same problem. And so when you attach yourself to that community that's already working to solve the problem you're working to solve, it's like, you know, you've been swimming all through high school, trying to be impressive, and now you just get to catch the wave and you just flow with the current because this organization, this community can carry you much farther, much faster than you could possibly go trying to swim on your own. All right. And so just kind of a checklist, as you are working to do these things, you want to solve a problem or work to solve a problem that violates your core values. You want to collect the evidence of that. And then over time, you scale that solution. Whatever it is that you're doing, you begin small and build momentum. I tell my students all the time, you want to plant the seeds of your impact project, but you don't need to care where it's going to go. Because if you do this right, it's going to go farther than you thought it would go anyway. And if you care too much about where it's going to go, you're going to stop the natural growth and the pivots that would have happened that take you where you want to go. So we kind of move in this direction. We start small and we build momentum. We collect evidence along the way. Really quick case study. This is a unusual circumstance because Iris was, again, a real person who was this perfect impressiveness trap student. Okay, so in her high school, there were a total of 12 possible APs. She took all of them and she got fives in all of them. Okay, she was in student body leadership. She was in student council. She was a varsity athlete. She played music. She was in the band and the orchestra. In fact, she actually played a solo at Carnegie Hall at one point. Top student in her class. Okay. And maybe you already know the next stage, right? What happens next? Oh, I don't have the slide here. She was rejected from her top school, which was Stanford. She was rejected from all the Ivy League schools that she applied to. Even though she had, and it shocked everyone in her school because she was the top student in the school, right? Of course, everyone is going to be doing great work, and everyone believes that she's the best of the best in her school. She's the most impressive. For sure, she's going to stand out, right? But there are 30,000 schools. And so maybe she's one of the top 5,000 of those 30,000 valedictorians, one of the best. But that doesn't mean that she can get the admissions officer's attention. Okay. Fortunately, this is why this is such a great case study. Fortunately, she was a junior when she graduated and was ready to graduate and go to college. All of her friends were a year older than her. And so she planned to skip her senior year, and she planned that from like sixth grade on, right? She was planning to do that from very, very early. And so as a junior, she was rejected from her dream school of Stanford. She was rejected from all the Ivy League schools she applied to. She decided to come back for her senior year. But those of you who are familiar with this, you know that Ivy Day is very late. So she didn't know that she was rejected from all of her schools until Ivy Day, right? So she only has months before her senior year. If she goes back for her senior year, she still only has a few months to do what we've been describing. But we did it. Okay. She dropped everything. She dropped out of sports. She dropped out of music. She wasn't in the band or the orchestra because she loved the band and orchestra. She loved music, but the orchestra and the band that she was in was not as dedicated as she wanted it to be. So she was always just there because that's impressive on a resume, right? She was in student council and she couldn't quit student council until the end of the school year, but she didn't run for senior year. She dropped out of every club that she was in. She did not go for tennis, which was her varsity sport. She dropped all of that so that she had time to figure out her core values, which took over a month. Real introspection, 6-7 weeks of deep thinking and answering these questions. But once she figured out her core values, one of those core values was gender equity. One of her strengths was economics. She loved economics. And so Iris did something very cool. In her senior year application, everything centered around this person whose core values align with gender equity and then bridging gaps. So her theme was that she helps, different organizations or different groups of people see past their differences to get along. And she had a lot of evidence over time of that. She had some evidence accumulated, and then she needed to create some new evidence. And so one of the ways was to overcome kind of that gender gap, right? And a problem that violated her core values was the fact that in all of her economics textbooks that she had been studying from, they were all gender biased. They all had pictures and examples that were more applicable to a male audience compared to a female audience. And she said, what's up with that? Why is that okay? And so she spent the summer collaborating with a economics professor. And together, they wrote a gender-neutral intro to economics textbook. So she called it an Economics 101, intro to economics for middle school students. That sounds shocking, and it is. I mean, if you're going to create an actual textbook that takes professors 2 or 3 years to write, she wrote kind of a guide to an intro to economics, right? Some of the main ideas. And so it's not as crazy as it sounds. It's something that she could accomplish in a few months, which she did. She published her gender-neutral economics textbook, and then she distributed it to a couple different middle schools in her area in her community. And so there were actual schools that adopted her textbook before she applied, and she couldn't apply early decision to any schools because she wasn't done in time. But she applied regular decision to Stanford, her dream school, regular decision to Ivy League schools as well. She had proof of her core values through her application that centered around this theme. And now she had an impact project that really showcased her her core values there. And the second time around, we have a much better ending to the story. She was admitted to several Ivy League schools and Stanford, which was her dream school all along. And she is currently a junior at Stanford studying economics and computer science. And last I spoke with her, which was quite some time ago, I haven't spoken with her in almost 2 years, but last I spoke with her, she was doing great, absolutely loving life. And that resourcefulness that we talked about, that problem-solving element to approach to life, she said it has served her so well at Stanford. And that is exactly the approach that the successful students at Stanford have. And so it's not just Harvard. In my experience, her experience at Stanford was very, very similar. And I want you to know, some of you are feeling like, man, this is overwhelming. This is so much. But you can do this, okay? You can do this. There are ways to showcase your core values. And first you have to figure out your core values, right? You have to discover those core values, but then to identify problems in your community that violate your core values and work together to solve those problems, you can do this. And what we see is instead of where most of the counselors that I talk to, they talk about how students are so excited in seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade. They're so excited to get started and move forward. But over time, they just kind of burn out. They get absolutely worn down as they work so hard throughout high school. And I see the opposite. I see students who are nervous in seventh grade, eighth grade, who are wondering if they're ready for high school, let alone ready for college prep. And each year, they just become more and more confident, because they're living more and more closely aligned to their core values, where everyone else is kind of looking around at their peers to figure out how to behave in any given situation. Students who know their core values look inwardly. They can see what's most important to them and align their decisions with those values. And so their confidence grows each year of high school as they become more and more prepared. Most people spend their whole high school time in the impressiveness trap, right? They think that being impressive is the key to standing out. So awareness, now you've overcome the first and the biggest hurdle. You hopefully understand that that is not the way that we move forward. The second is actually identifying your core values is tricky. I will say that I talk to hundreds of families, and most of the time, the parents who are the role models for the teens, the parents are still in the, I better work really, really hard because the next opportunity is coming trap. And they don't live their lives, aligned with core values per se. They live their lives trying to be ready for the next big opportunity. And so if a teenager is in an environment where they don't have teachers who know their core values, they don't have parents who understand their core values, then they don't have any models to figure that out. And so that's one of the big challenges, is this idea that identifying your core values is very personal, but it takes a tremendous amount of reflection. It takes a process. And so what we do in my course, so I just very quickly to help kind of clarify this for everyone, what I do is I take people through what's called the Ivy League Challenge is my course. And the Ivy League Challenge in phase one, the entire first month of the challenge, we're working to figure out the teen's core values. And we're answering those questions, and we're asking a number of we're assigning the teens to do exercises that help them figure out their core values. And so that's kind of that first step is identifying your core values. The second challenge after identifying your core values is figuring out how to move forward, right? Like your impact project. How do you make sure that you're not taking on too much? How do you make sure you're not taking on too little? How do you know that you're planting the seed and getting the right support? How do you find the experts and the community and the support group that can, we talked about, it can carry you downstream as opposed to trying to swim upstream? All of that can be a barrier. And then the teens themselves. Oftentimes, they're excited to get started, but they do have whatever beliefs they had coming in. And that can be tricky as well. What we've described here, you guys, I want to impress upon you that this is not just, you know, better for their mental health. It is honestly a far more effective strategy. If you want to be competitive for the most competitive schools, you have to get the grades, you have to get the test scores. That's a given. That's not the problem in with most of the families that I talk to. The problem is, how do you take yourself out of the impressiveness trap and pull yourself out of that pile of tens of thousands of hardworking, ambitious teens that don't, you know, that all look the same? All right, Aditi asks a really good question. If a student starts a club at school around their core values, is that considered an impact project? Aditi, that's a great start. Starting clubs is not that exciting. So a club maybe isn't the best way. There are problems with clubs. Number one, generally schools have rules about how a club can function. And oftentimes they require a teacher to be there to support. And so you kind of end up with a bit of a bottleneck with a school club. Whereas if you just create an organization or a community that is not bound by the school, that sometimes can grow a little bit easier and a little bit faster. But the other thing is, you know, saying you started the club is not helpful, but saying what the club did is helpful. So what matters is the impact that the club had. If you started a club, it doesn't really matter. If you started a club and 300 people attended every week, there's some impact there. Something is bringing 300 people there. That's important. But starting a club by itself is not important. Attendance by itself isn't that important. What did those 300 people do as a result of being in the club? Or 30 people? And 300 is amazing. That would be incredible. But what did the 30 people do that you organized? That's the thing that matters. So starting a club is a great place to start. It helps the team to feel like they've built some momentum, which is really, really good. But it's the thing that the club does that's actually going to make the difference, if that makes sense.
Yeah, got it. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome. Let me just go back and see if I've caught DK. Yeah, you can contact me through that. You can also, the IvyLeagueChallenge.com is my, I'll just type that in here. The IvyLeagueChallenge.com, that's my website. Tips on how kids identify their core values. Oh man, Gita, that is such a great question. It is so complex though. Some tips are, teens often don't want to talk about deep reflections with parents. But they love to talk about it with other teens. So what we do in the Ivy League Challenge is we actually meet in cohorts where teens can go into breakout rooms and answer the questions that I give them. We found that that's very effective, but parents are a little bit handicapped because teens generally aren't open to exploring. Right now they're kind of testing boundaries there and trying to create some independence, even if they don't act like they want to be independent. It's healthy at that age for them to try to become more independent. And so parents can play that role with some teens, but it's tricky. All of the questions that I asked there are the things that you're going to, those are the things you're going to ask and ask the teen to reflect on. You know, what legacy do they want to leave behind? What breaks their heart? What makes them angry? What brings them joy? Whom do they admire? What holds their attention for long periods of time? And all of those are just clues that we use to kind of probe deeper. And it's the reflection and the questions and then the probing and the conversations, that combination helps the teens kind of narrow down the different options, the different values that matter most to them. I did see another one. What kind of activities showcase your personality to colleges? So activities that highlight your core values, right? And the best way to do that is to begin working to solve a problem that violates your core values, or begin building a community that reinforces your core values. And it's usually easier, it's usually simpler to understand solving a problem that violates rather than building a community that builds your core values. But those are the two options, kind of broadly speaking. And so generally, a teenager does not have all the skills they need to solve a real problem in the real world or to build a community. Think of all the work that went into building the Grad Achiever platform and man, how many hours and what kind of effort that required. Teens generally can support an effort and can be supported, but they generally need to join communities that are already working to solve that problem. So that's generally how teens get started. But it has to begin with figuring out their core values so that they're not doing things just to be impressive, quote unquote, right? That's the trap. If you switch from healthy ambition into toxic desperation, then we're doing a disservice, then we are hurting the teens rather than helping them.
Music for this episode came from We Are Here by Declare P. I'm Steve Gardner. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and share with a friend. Thanks for listening.